him earlier on that, when it's your first time to the portfolio committee, you get baptized. So the choice will be ours whether we baptize him with holy water or we baptize him with fire. But he said he's comfortable with any of the two. Because he's long been in all these things, so whatever comes, he's very, very comfortable. Welcome, Deputy Chairperson. Let me welcome your team also. Welcome, Mr. Tlabisa from the Department of Transport. Everybody, you're all welcome, my colleagues. I'm not going to be wasting time. We are in that season where we look at your strategic plans. We also look at your annual performance plans. And we also take ourselves down the memory lane to see how did you fare in the past financial year, what were the issues which actually we would like to impress upon yourself as we are dealing with the way forward. But at the same time, what we have done as the portfolio committee was to give you a template of the issues that you would want to really impress upon the portfolio committee. But it doesn't stop you from looking into other issues that you believe the portfolio committee should be aware of or should take cognizance of, so that we are able to, as we will be preparing to go for the budgets with the minister, be able to say to yourself, these are the issues and these are the things that we need to highlight for the people of the Republic to can be able to be aware of in the portfolio within which you are operating. Deputy Chairperson, let me hand it over to you so that we can be able to start with the presentation. Just introduce your team, probably the person who will be leading the presentation, and then we'll take it from there. Thank you very much.
Honourable Chair, thank you for that warm welcome. I really appreciate it. And also the other members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be here. I know that the apology for Mr. Sipho Khumalo has been given through to you. He's in Tanzania at the moment on a state visit. It's actually the inaugural session of the Binational Commission between South Africa and Tanzania. He's there during this week. The Minister of Transport, Honorable Joe Masangwani, has asked him to go with him. So, and we've given you the apology. The team next to me is a very competent team. The Chief Operating Officer, which I think is going to do most of the presentation, is Mr. Mahepe. The Chief Financial Officer is down there, is Mr. Manyawe. Also, Mr. Kaloi, who is the Executive Manager for Research and Development. I've seen him earlier. And then Ms. Nkube, who is the Program Manager in the Office of the CEO. We are presenting a strategic plan, an annual performance plan to you, as you've said. I think from my side, the important thing to say is that we've worked very much with the team from the board of directors side to provide guidance and oversight in the strategy, and we see three important pillars on which it's based. The one is obviously our financial sustainability, and we'll talk about that. The other one is to position ourselves strategically in the area amongst our stakeholders, and then also in terms of the regulatory reforms that we follow, and then yes, transformation of the sector is also very important to us. And we took into account our resource base as we've developed this. So just be assured of our commitment to help the agency from the board side to deliver on this plan and this mandate. And we also appreciate your leadership. And you need to understand that we will continue to support your oversight role. We believe it's important, and we are completely committed to that. So thank you for that, and I will hand it over then to Mr. Mayor.
Honorable Chair, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity again to come and present our strategic plan and the APP for 2017-18. Indeed, Chair, our presentation has taken into account the guidelines that you have provided. We have tried to cover as much as possible in terms of the guidelines, Chairperson. Just in terms of the table of contents, I will not go through them, Chair, but that's what we intend to cover in our presentation. I think the key issues, Chair, in the main is the amendment of the strategic plan that we just want to give a sense of what gave what necessitated the change, Chair, as well as directly then talk to the APP and take you through some of the 2015-16 audit outcomes and where we are in terms of the performance for the year that ended, that is the 16-17 financial year. Chair, we thought it's important also that as we start, just to remind ourselves, Chair, that as the CBRTA established in terms of the CBRTA Act of 1998, Act Number 4, that we, Chair and members, established primarily to license commercial cross-border road transport operators. Our vision, Chair, is to be the champions of the free-flow interstate operations, mainly making sure that we spearhead an impeded flow of interstate operations, but also in the process facilitating social and economic development. So briefly, just in terms of our mandate for the Act, there are about six or so pillars that we are chasing in terms of our mandate. One is to eliminate the impediments in the flow of passengers and freight by route across the regional borders. The second pillar in terms of our strategy, Chair, is to introduce regulated competition in cross-border passenger transport, and this is mainly to make sure that there's a balance between demand and supply within the passenger cross-border space. The third one, Chair, is to liberalize market access in the cross-border freight transport, as well as to reduce operational constraints in the industry that might be facing our operators. Also to enhance and strengthen capacity in the public sector, but also mainly making sure that we build industry partnerships so that we can empower the industry. There are many different role players in the industry, and our role is then to work with them to make sure that through partnership we are able to impact positively on how our operators experience their business within the cross-border. And in the main, making sure that we are creating a constraint-free and a conflict-free industry. So one of the pillars that continues to drive our efforts is the SADC protocol on transport and communication and methodology that was signed in 1996. So in particular, that calls upon us within the SADC to ensure that there's equal treatment, there is non-discrimination, and there's fair competition. So in the main, it means that, Chair, we need to push the harmonization agenda within SADC so that you are able to then enable regional trade to be smooth. Just in terms of the cross-border environment, Chair, without going deep into it, just to indicate that the total number of commercial borders that we are in, Chair, is 53 in total, of which 19 of them is commercial borders. 53 is the total borders, and 19 of that, Chair, is the commercial borders. And of those chairperson and members, four of them, that is the Bay Bridge borders, the Limbombo, Maseru, and the Skilpatshek, are the ones that carries most of the volume at almost 70% of the traffic vehicles passing through those borders. And Chair, just also indicate, these are the borders that move across the North-South Corridor, the Trans-Kalahari Corridor, as well as the Maputo N4 Corridor. Chair, just also in terms of the environment, some of the key issues there that we are confronted with remain the delays at the border post, inadequate infrastructure at the border post, issues around parking and the size of the road. And of course, one of the issues there is the frequency of stoppages of law enforcement along the corridor. And we are championing a particular project called AUKUS that seeks to eliminate, to a large extent, the stoppages in terms of the law enforcement. The role players in the border space, in the Department of Home Affairs, the SARS, SAPS, State Security Agency, Agriculture, and Port Health, as the key stakeholders, Chair. Just moving, Chair, to the socio-economic environment, I think what is important here, Chair, is that as a country, we need to contribute, Chair, to the development and to making sure that we achieve the aspirations of the NDP, that place importance on promoting the inter-Africa trade. And we believe that as cross-border, we are positioned to contribute significantly to achieving this through our regional integration agenda. Because, Chair, we need indeed to make sure that Africa trade more with itself. I will move, Chair, just to regional environment, just to indicate that as a country we are a signatory to the SADC Protocol on Transport, Communication and Meteorology, but also to indicate, Chair, that there is efforts by SADC, EAC and COMESA tripartite around creating a single multilateral cross-border road transport permit across the regions. Chairperson, and then also just to indicate that currently we are working with a number of bilateral agreements that we have as a country with Malawi, Mozambique, Zimbabwe and Zambia. We also have the MOU on Trans-Kalahari Corridor that involves Botswana, Namibia and South Africa, and also the SACU MOU that is with Swaziland, Lesotho, Namibia and Botswana. So Chair, this basically does sum up the regional environment that we operate in. So the next slide is just to give an indication of the alignment of our goals. We have got four goals and how these goals, Chair, are aligned to, with the NDP in particular. And Chair, the first goal that we have is to facilitate unimpeded flow of cross-border transport. That is aligned, Chair, with Chapter 7 of the NDP that speaks to implementation of a regional integration strategy that emphasizes on reducing red tape, corruption and delays at the borders. So this particular goal seeks to respond to make sure that we are able to move forward in terms of achieving aspirations of Chapter 7 of the NDP. The other goal, Chair, that we have is the strategic positioning to promote integration of the African continent, also aligned, Chair, with Chapter 7 of the NDP, but most importantly, making sure that from where we are, working together with different stakeholders within SADC, to make sure that we all contribute towards achieving the Africa that we want. The third goal relates to the promotion of safe and reliable cross-border transport. Chairperson, these are our efforts in terms of making sure that we have got incident-free roads in South Africa, making sure that there's proper harmonization in terms of safety standards with the rest of the SADC region. The last goal there, Chairperson and members, is to enhance organizational performance in order to improve sustainability. And Chapter 13 of the NDP especially speaks to how we need to make sure that we've got proper governance structures, we've got stable leadership, and Chair, we are able to then bring experience and competency within the public sector to make sure that we are able to position ourselves to achieve the aspirations of the NDP. So just to give a sense of the changes in the strategic plan that was presented earlier, we had to amend the strategy because of a significant change in our operation. I'm sure members will be aware that there was a resolution to move towards a single police station. Within the transport sector, there was a decision that at least within the transport sector, we move towards a single traffic police. So the National Road Safety Summit of 2015 then resolved that the law enforcement within CBRTA will then be moving to the RTMC to be consolidated with the National Traffic Police as a phased approach moving towards a single traffic police within transport. So that necessitated that we then amend our strategic plan to make sure that there is also that alignment, but also Chair, with the majority of board members coming in towards the early of the financial year, we also had to reflect together with the board to see how we position the agency. In the main, some of the changes, Chairperson, relates to the vision and mission. I will just indicate how it was before. We've also streamlined and focused the goals that we had. We also refocused, without losing focus though, on the strategic objectives that we had. And even the number of indicators, we streamlined them. There were 18. We streamlined them just to make sure that there's a particular focus on where we need to have the highest impact. The vision, Chair, as it was before, was the leading road transport trade facilitation. And this particular vision almost neglected, so to speak, the passenger space because it was more on the trade. But because we facilitate both freight and passengers, we then had to change the vision to make sure that we talk about a free flow of the interstate operations, be it trade, be it freight, be it tourism, and all of that. But the vision, the mission remains primarily the same. We just tweaked it a little bit to say that we spearhead an impeded flow of interstate operations as the main, but also then facilitating socio-economic development. The slide that is before you, Chairperson, now just indicates the changes on the goals. We had 5 goals initially, as I've indicated. We have streamlined them. We now have 4 goals. But you will see that goal number 4, the last 2, we had strategic positioning to ensure organizational sustainability. We also had enhanced organizational performance. We basically consolidated the 2 goals just to make sure that we have one goal that is more focused, and we said is to enhance organizational performance in order to improve sustainability and ensure value offering to our operators and industry at large. Just in terms of the amendments to the strategic goals, Chairs have indicated that we were refocusing the objectives. Chair, we introduced a particular objective that talks to efficiencies within business. There were a number of objectives that were standalone in terms of the integration of the IT system, in terms of the promotion and position of the reputation and the branding of the CBRTA, in terms of preventing fraud and corruption, as well as developing and implementing a high performance culture. So we actually consolidated all of them and said we've got one particular objective, that is to improve efficiency in business operations, and therefore the specific indicators and targets speaks to still the issues around how do we make sure that our IT system is proper, how do we make sure that we continue to deal with issues of fraud and corruption that might exist in our space. The other objective, Chair, that was added, that was not there, has to do with the promotion of transformation and development in the cross-border industry. And this in the main makes sure that we talk to an integrated passenger transport in the main, looking at how we integrate with the provincial regulatory entities, but also making sure that we champion the achievement of the BBB Transport Charter in the main. Moving to the key areas, focus areas for the 2017-18 financial year, that is in the APP, as the Deputy Chair has indicated. Our plans are on 3 pillars, one pillar being the strategic positioning of the agency, and that's where we do a number of initiatives there, including an annual state of cross-border report that we do on an annual basis and share with the stakeholders with a view of improving operations within the corridors and the borders. We also in this particular space share and members deal with the country profiles so that we are able to assist our SMMEs for easy entry into the cross-border market, as well as championing the stakeholder engagement plans as I've indicated. The other pillar then relates to the regulatory reforms. That is just to make sure that, as I've indicated, the transport charter is adhered to, and we actually better regulate also the industry. The financial sustainability, we'll also talk to it later on, relates to how we make sure that as an entity we are financially sustainable to make sure that we continue to implement the projects that we need to implement and to improve the industry as a whole. So in our plans for the coming financial year, we've got indicators that we have carried over from the previous APPs, but we also have new indicators that are coming into 2017-18. And the first area that I will deal with relates to what we are carrying over from 2016-17 financial year. And Chair, the first one there is the implementation of a scientific tool, that is the MAR. The project that we have been dealing with even the previous financial year, Chairperson, I must indicate that in the previous financial year we were piloting the tool. We piloted in Zimbabwe and Mozambique, and in the coming financial year we are looking forward to fully implementing the scientific tool. The second indicator that we are also carrying over relates to one of our flagship projects, that is the Operator Compliance Accreditation Scheme that we call OCAS. Chairperson, is basically a risk-based regulatory tool for certifying and accrediting cross-border operators. It is also a tool that is the scheme that is aligned with the SADC objectives of moving away from quantity regulations to quality regulations. We have been working on this. In the past financial year, we have done a feasibility assessment, and we think that in the coming financial year, we should move towards putting in place the legislation to make sure that the scheme is then implemented, and also making sure that we build the risk engine for the scheme so that we can begin to implement the scheme on a much more tangible basis. We also have the part of our law enforcement that I have indicated has migrated to RCMC, used to give us what you call a Section 39 report in terms of our act. These are reports that will give you a sense of the level of compliance by operators, and it's also a report that is used by our regulatory committee, that is a committee that considers the application of permits. It's a report that they use also for the purpose of processing the application. And even though the law enforcement is migrating to the RTMC, we have an MOU with the RTMC. We'll be working very closely with them to make sure that the regulatory committee is still supported by this intelligence report in making sure that we don't allow non-compliant operators into the industry. So we'll be working together with the RTMC. We do have an MOU with them that will ensure that we continue to support the regulatory committee with the information they require. The next one, Chair, as I've indicated, relates to the state of cross-border operations that we conduct on an annual basis. We'll continue with that. We have done one in the previous financial year, Chairperson and members, that looked at the three main corridors, that is your North-South Corridor, Trans-Kalahari and Maputo. And this report in the main, Chair, it covers the state of the entire corridor and the border. It begins to tease out what are the key challenges that we find in the corridors and the borders. It comes with what are the current developments within that, and how do we then make recommendations to make sure that we fast track with a view of improving our borders and our corridors. The country profiles also, as I've indicated earlier, we develop country profiles primarily to make sure that we tease out for our operators, we tease out for the SMMEs that seeks to enter the industry, what are the regulatory and operational requirements in the specific countries that we are looking at, and also what are some of the opportunities that as South African operators and investors we can take advantage of, making sure that we then maximize on our regional trade with a particular country. In the previous financial year, we did Malawi, we also did Lesotho country profiles. A year before last, we did Zimbabwe and Mozambique, and in the coming year, we also plan to do two of them, that is now the Swaziland and the Botswana country profiles. So moving forward, the indicator that we also carry over is very central to our financial sustainability. It has to do with the implementation of the cross-border charges as an additional revenue stream. And Chair and members, this is an issue that we have always spoken about when we come to the committee. We've always indicated that our cross-border operators, when they get into other countries, they get charged certain charges, but the operators from the other countries, when they come to South Africa, they don't get charged, and therefore almost like subsidizing the foreign operators at the expense of our local operators. So what we have done in the past year, we have done the business case, we have done a comprehensive research on the number of charges that our operators get subjected to. And the business case, we have discussed the business case with the department. We continue to enhance the business case. What we are planning to do in the current financial year is just to make sure that we do the socio-economic impact assessment that we need to do. Part of that is to then consult with your DTI, consult with Telco, with Department of Tourism, SARS and Treasury, in making sure that we take into account all the factors that must be taken into. We're hoping that in the course of the year, Chairperson, we should be able to finalize the consultation. We should be able to begin to work also on the legislation that will then empower us to be able to then implement the cross-border charges. And Chair, this is one of the areas that has got a dual benefit. One is to make sure that we harmonize in terms of the industry, SADC member states, but secondly is in itself a sustainability strategy from a finance point of view. When we did our internal calculation, it indicated, and when we did the research as well, it indicated that some of the cross-border charges relate to user charges that can assist, for example, Sunrail in terms of their funding. Some of the charges relate to insurance, third-party insurance, for example, that our operators get charged, and we have a RAF that is struggling with financing. So we think that is a stream that can then benefit the sector as well, but in the main we are saying it's a harmonization issue, and we need to harmonize and make sure that our operators are not negatively impacted when they cross to the other side of SADC. They get charged and the operators don't get charged. It basically creates unfair competition. The next target, Chairperson, relates to the development of an integrated cross-border system. It's a system that we hope to finalize as well in the next financial year, rather not in the current financial, in the coming 2017-18. We want to finalize it in the 18-19 financial year. It's a system that is going to integrate with all other industry-specific systems like your INETIS, but it's also a system that we think will enable us to move towards the e-permit. You know, we still have operators who, when they apply for permit, they must physically come to the CBRT head office and so forth, and we think that this particular system will enable us to take advantage of the technology and make sure that we make life easy for operators in terms of decentralization of permit applications. The next indicator, Chair, that I want to talk about relates to the stakeholder management plan. Chair, we always had this indicator, but this year we're hoping to elevate it a little bit. We have a plan that we call the Linking Africa Plan. It's a plan that we say through it we need to realize the aspirations of the AU Agenda 2063. We need to contribute towards making sure that we achieve that particular AU agenda. We're thinking that if we are able to have trade and transport as twin partners, we will be able to move towards achieving what we need to achieve. So we're thinking that in the coming financial year, as we finalize the plan, it's going to be informed by a very robust stakeholder mobilization across different member states, across different regions, to make sure that we understand the Africa that we want and the Africa that we deserve, and we also begin to identify key interventions that we need to do as regions to move towards achieving that particular agenda. So one of the areas that we also will be looking at as new indicators is the issue around the implementation of the SADC protocol. Because this protocol was signed way back in the 1996, and we haven't had an opportunity to really look back and audit and see, but where are we in terms of what we intended to do at the time? So what we then think we should be doing in the coming financial year is to begin to workshop this with other member states as well, to begin to say, way back in 1996, we agreed as different countries on the protocol. Where are we on the protocol? What has been the challenges? What has been the constraints that led us to not implementing some of the things? Why is the region still not harmonized? Why are we still having barriers when we have the SADC protocol that its intention was to make sure that we achieve unimpeded flow? So we need to go back and sit as different stakeholders and say, where are we in relation to where we are supposed to be? What are the issues that impacted? How do we then deal with those issues? And this is one of the areas, Chair, that we want to champion in the coming financial year. Another area that we want to work on, Chair and members, relates to the development of what we call a model to calculate the transit times at the borders. It's a calculator that we are going to be championing. The intention there is to look at the cost of delays. When we had bottlenecks, what are the cost of these bottlenecks? We're thinking that it's also going to be a tool that will enable us, even when we begin to look at investment in terms of dealing with the issues, around the cost benefit, because we'll be able to say the actual cost to the economy, the cost to the operators of these bottlenecks is this much. We are able then to say that if the investment required to deal with this bottleneck is this much, but this is the benefit because we are reducing the cost to the economy, we are reducing the cost to the operators. So we're thinking that is a tool that we'll also use in making sure that all the different stakeholders that play a role in the cross-border space begin to see all these impediments, all these constraints with a similar eye, so that we can then all together agree in terms of what we need to do to move forward and deal with the constraints and make the necessary investments. The other indicator that we'll be dealing with relates to the implementation of the industry development strategy. This is a strategy that is looking at the corridor development. It's a strategy that I believe will begin to tease out issues around the border town initiatives. We've got so many border towns who just sitting and looking at the traffic passing through them. What are the opportunities for them? From an industry development point of view, are there possibilities for them to put in place mechanics, tires, you know, because they are right, you know, on the way of the cross-border movement. So we're looking at that as well, but also in terms of the SME development, what kind of initiatives will be put in place to make sure that our SMEs really take part in terms of the cross-border industry and the benefit out of the industry itself. The very last new indicator there, Chair, relates to the efficiency that we need to build into our permit processing issues. We are, Chairperson, as I've indicated, primarily exists to issue permits, and therefore there's an area that we need to master, but as I've indicated as well, once we put in place the cross-border system that decentralized and enable operators to apply even when they're not in the CBRTA offices, I think this will be able to assist us with this going forward. So I've spoken about the transport transformation initiatives around the strategy, as I've indicated. How do we make sure that we empower the new entrants into the cross-border industry? How do we make sure that the SMEs that are within the industry, they benefit, they are able to grow and become a big players in the industry? How do we make sure that the towns across the corridors that are closer to the borders take advantage of opportunities of the volumes in their own areas? How to make sure that the transport, the cross-border industry sector is in itself is transformed and is compliant with the BBB Charter of Transport. So allow me just to pause here, Chairperson, just allow the the Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Manyawi, just to take us through the financials and the audit outcomes.
Thank you, Chair. The next three slides will deal with our budget for in the medium term, but also the audit outcomes for the agency. Our budget is primarily meant to support the strategy that the CEO has just presented, but also to fund the positioning that you have spoken to, as well as the regulatory reforms that we're embarking on as an agency. In the past, Chair, we had basically three streams of revenue. One was permit issuance fees, the second was the fines that we were collecting, and the third one was the interest income that we generate from our investments. We don't expect any penalty income. We've moved our law enforcement function to the RTMC. But the effect of that on our financial sustainability is positive, in the sense that we expect to save 48 million per annum as a result of that transfer. Because we're going to sacrifice our penalty income, which we project to be about 31 million per annum, but also going to save on operating costs, which are coming to close to 80 million per annum. So what then means is we expect 98% of our revenue to be generated by permit issuance, and 2% will come from the interest element that we are going to be generating from our investments. So that is a positive move from a sustainability point of view, Chair. You would also recall that we had a financial challenge coming from the Constitutional Court judgment that we lost in 2015, and we're trying to manage that again from a sustainability point of view, and I'll explain. The effect of the judgment was such that 2 years ago we had to create a liability of 356 million in our balance sheet. To date, we have refunded the industry about 130 million. So our balance sheet has been weak, but it has improved dramatically compared to the last two financial years. If I can go into the numbers, we had 2 years ago a figure of 255 million of our liabilities in excess of our assets. That reduced to 220 million in the last financial year, and we expect it to be reduced to 189 million by the end of, or by 31, as of the 31st of March 2017, which is the last financial year. Chair, with the transfer of the law enforcement function to the RTMC, you will notice that we can now afford to fund our regulatory reforms and position ourselves better. I think you would notice that in the past, 70% of our collections were going towards, for example, compensation of employees. That is reduced to 55%, which means we can do better in terms of project funding than we would have done in the past. And as indicated earlier on, we have performed quite well compared to relative to what we would have assumed 2 years ago in terms of how we fund our operators. We have engaged them on an individual basis in terms of how we refund them, how we structure the refunding, so that it doesn't have an impact on our cash flow. So our cash flow has been positive. The balances have been positive for the last three financial years, despite the challenge, and in future we expect them to remain positive as well. So our funding model, Chair, is as indicated there. 55% will go towards compensation of employees, 35% will go towards goods and services, 3% will be charged for depreciation and amortization, and 7% will go towards funding our capital expenditure, which is primarily our IT infrastructure that the CEO has just reported on. Finally, Chair, from a finance point of view, we've just indicated the audit outcomes there. In 2011-12, we had a qualified audit opinion. In 2012-13, we had an unqualified audit opinion, which was quite a great improvement. In 14-15, we also had an unqualified audit opinion. And in the last financial year, we had a clean audit. We hope and expect to carry that into the financial year that has just ended, 31 March. The final audit from the AG is in progress, and we expect to be able to hear the results by end of July sometime. So we have managed to do this, Chair, through a lot of interventions. As I've indicated, the transfer of our law enforcement function to RTMC has helped, but we've also had internal cost savings measures that have helped our balance sheet and our financial performance in general. We are also hoping to introduce in the medium term cross-border charges that we think would also help our balance sheet from a revenue point of view. And as indicated earlier on, we've managed to refund $130 million from our own balance sheet, from our own resources, without necessarily having the agency being declared bankrupt. So on a quarterly basis, Chair, we are reporting to our mother department, the Department of Transport, in terms of the achievements that we would have made, or the strides that we would have made on our turnaround plan. And to date, Chair, we have been progressing well, and the results have been more than what we had expected initially. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, the remaining slides really deals with the performance for 2016-17. I've spoken to a number of them, so I won't go through all of them. I'll just indicate the first one there, Chair, that we're speaking about the transfer of our law enforcement to RTMC in response to the constitutional imperative of establishing a single police service, and also in support of the 2015 National Road Safety Summit. As we speak, from the 1st of April 2017, our law enforcement officers are reporting to the RTMC. So I'll just move also to number 6, and just talk to issues around the constraints. And so this is an area that we are dealing with, we're attending to it on a daily basis. We have a system where operators are able to raise their constraints in the different forums that we have with them. We record them in the register and try to deal with them. And most of the constraints, Chair, we deal with them within 6 months. There are those that are dependent on other stakeholders, and we engage with the joint committees between countries. We engage directly with the different member states with the view of resolving these constraints. In the previous year, for example, we had JCs with a number of countries. One of the key issues that has always been a challenge has been the third-party insurance. Chair, that we've been championing in various structures. Zambia has now agreed, Chairperson, they are establishing a motor vehicle accident fund that we believe that it will also address the issue of the third-party insurance. With the Zimbabwe Binational that we had, Chairperson, there is a commission that has been established to look into this issue of third-party insurance. So these are some of the constraints that we are raising, that we are championing on behalf of the operators. There are certain issues around the non-recognition of vehicle standards in different countries, as I was indicating that we still have a challenge of harmonization of systems. We are championing these initiatives. One of them is the, as I've indicated, the issue around the cross-border charges, where our operators complain about being charged, and when the operators, when they come to South Africa, are not being charged. As I've indicated, we are finalizing plans to levy cross-border charges. As I've indicated, we are dealing with the legislative proposal in the current financial year, 2017-18. We believe that at the right time, together with the Department of Transport, we should be able to come to the committee if there's a need for intervention from the committee in terms of legislation, if the regulation will be able to deal with it. But in any way, Chair, we should be able to report to the committee in terms of how far we are with the levying of cross-border charges, because it's something that is really impacting negatively on the cross-border operators, the domestic cross-border operators. So I must just indicate, moving forward, I'm not going to deal with the other indicators. We had about 18 indicators in the current financial year that has just ended, rather. Where we had 12 indicators, we have achieved 12. We did not achieve 6 that are also indicated there, due to a number of reasons, one being the dependence on stakeholders, one being the internal efficiencies, and some of them is just in approach. And I will also not talk about them. I believe that when the annual reports are finalized, we'll have an opportunity to come and talk to some of these issues. I therefore just want to move the information that the committee has requested in terms of the template on the board of directors. Chair, just to indicate that the CBRTA is a board of 12 members, that is including the CEO. We currently have a vacancy in the board. We have 7 members instead of 12, so we have got 5 vacancies in the board. The department, they advertised and they are working on the employees chairperson to make sure that we fill the vacancies. It's just a 3-year board that gets reappointed after every 3 years. The board operates within a charter, chairperson. I must also indicate that we do annual board appraisals. You'll see that the board that is in place is fairly new, and it's only now in May, June that we'll be working on the appraisal of the board, because it's only now that they are completing 12 months in the agency. But we have done appraisals before in 2015 in relation to the previous board, and we can share some of those reports with the committee if need be. The standard committees that we have in the board, Chair, audit and risk as a key committee. We've got the REMCO remuneration committee. We've got the social and ethics committee and the procurement committee that they may meet as and when required in terms of the delegation of authority. But we also have a regulatory committee that is looking at operations, but that also processes the application for payments. So the next slide does indicate the different board members. You will see that we have only one board member, which is Mr. Moses Silver Scott, who has been with the agency since 2014. His board membership is about to expire in 2017. But the department is on the matter. They are working on making sure that we fill the vacancies. In terms of the board meetings, as indicated, there were non-board meetings in the year 2016-17, 8 audit committee meetings, 8 regulatory committee meetings, and 5 regulatory hearings. And these hearings are where it's just dealing with applications of permits, not normal operations meeting. And so the procurement meeting met once, not twice. It met once in the year just ended. So the constraints and challenges, as indicated, the issue of the funding model, we have spoken to it, is the issue around the cross-border charges. We had a revenue or financial sustainability strategy that looked at a number of streams. We did a feasibility on the different streams, and the key one that emerged as a stream that is very feasible is the cross-border charges. And I must indicate also, in terms of the assistance from the department, there is a task team that is headed by an official from the department working on the introduction of cross-border charges. It's also inclusive of Sandral. We are also looking at including RAF in the project, in the task team. Challenge number 2, Chair, we've spoken about the challenge in terms of the technical insolvency and what we are doing there. We had developed a turnaround plan that has got 2 phases. One phase was the stabilization phase. As the CFO indicated, in terms of the stabilization phase, we feel that we have stabilized. In terms of the transformation phase, is the cross-border charges and other streams that we are looking at, and that is still a work in progress, Chairperson. The other key challenge that remains, Chair, is the issue of the Free State Lesotho. The task team that was established by the minister is still working together with the different stakeholders, together with the officials from the Kingdom of Lesotho to find the lasting solution. We have had engagement with TAREC Secretariat that is beginning to assist as well in terms of making sure that we find a solution to the challenge that we are having. Chairperson, thank you so much. That's the end of the presentation.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, there we go. Very elaborate presentation which is in front of us. The takers on the matter. Let me indicate that one observation that one has made is that all the regulatory bodies, parastatals, one of the key things that one is coming across is the challenge of unsustainability in terms of your projects and related matters, because you rely on whatever would be coming your way in funding that will be able to sustain yourselves. And I think it will be important that we start looking into ways and means, or thinking out of the box as to how we can be able to deal with this challenge, because it's not only you, RTA has got the same challenge, RTMC is also experiencing what you are experiencing financially. And I believe that we should be able to say what are the systems that we can put for regulatory organs so that you are able to sustain yourself without necessarily depending, because part of the things that we were saying is, are you going to issue out to RTMC and RTA, are you going to issue out more tickets for you to can sustain yourself? Are you going to also have a lot of permits which actually will make people to start fighting amongst themselves because the cake is this big and you have taken out this big permit? What exactly what are the things and the systems that you can put in place for you to can be able to become sustainable without necessarily doing things that will compromise your systems and your programs? Honourable members, there we go. Honourable Ramatakana, I can see your hand. Honourable Khadebe, Honourable Freitas, let me start with Honourable Khadebe and come this way.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, welcome the report from CBRTA. I apologize, Chair, for arriving late, but I guess I still got the train still starting to move. So one question that I'll start with, it's in relation to your new indicator, number 10, where you're speaking about the facilitation of the workshop within the SADC protocol regional agreement. I'm trying to understand what will be the output or the outcome of that particular workshop. Because, Chair, there's been a tendency that entities will just arrange workshop just to have tea and biscuits kind of an engagement. But what is the outcome? What is the intention of this workshop? Because we must have value for it. Because we must spend money, we must get value for it. So you must tell us what is the real value out of that particular workshop. The other one, it's in relation to your indicator number 12, implementation of the industrial development strategy. I'm trying to understand that how does it help CBRTA, how does it help you? Is it within your mandate to check who see the towns are booming economically or what? Because my view is that you are encroaching in space that you are not supposed to. But I'm trying to understand. But how are you going to ensure that at least that you can engage with this thing? Are you going to engage straight with the municipality, or what are you going to do? because as per my view, we're supposed to engage with SALGA per se, because SALGA is the overseer of all municipalities. So you can't just go and say, no, because we've got an interest of this town that passes to Swaziland, Caroline, you go and engage there, because it's my town, I'm impressed on Rokate. don't impress me, but you must, it must be within your mandate, it must be within the aspects of the process or the procedures, which is SAG that is overseeing all these municipalities. The other one, it's in relation to your audit report. No, I appreciate that you've gradually grown from qualified up to the clean audit. I must really congratulate you and give you a heads up for good performance. But my question is in relation to that you had a liability from 2014 in your constitutional court judgment that you needed to fund a particular amount. I'm trying to get you to understand how did it affect the agents? Did it affect also that your audit doesn't become clean or not? But as per your also indicator, I mean as per your saying, is that it affected your balance sheet. If it affected your balance sheet, did it affect also your operational work or not? But moreover, how does that speak to the audit outcome? Because you can't say this affected this one in terms of finances based on your clean audit. I mean, I understand. Maybe it's my lack of knowledge of finances. I'm an engineer. I don't know finances, but I need to understand. The other one, the other one is in relation to your expenditure budget. I'm trying to understand. I've seen you've reduced the issue of the compensation of employees, but 55%. It's too much. I think basically you are no longer doing what you're supposed to do. You are just compensating employees. And I'm asking myself whether do you get value from these employees being compensated every day? Because if ever you've got more employees and you're compensating more of them every day, they must be able to get a lot of, they must give you a value. Why do you have them? Otherwise you're going to have a challenge of having people sitting there not doing anything, but you're just compensating them. Because my view is that you are having people that are just spectators or check collectors, you know, because that's another challenge that you must be able to look at. The last one, Chair, we're looking at the relationship of the other entities in terms of the formulation of the board. Hey, this board, Chair, has got 12 members. And that other board that had the most important aspect had less. Is it value for money or what? I think we must engage with the minister to review the status of these boards. Because unless when they can be able to motivate properly to say why do they need more members of the boards. Because it really doesn't make sense that we have a lot of members of the board. But as well, if you can request maybe the attendance register, you find some of them, they don't even attend. They attend sometimes, you know, because they are also busy and all those things. That's my cue, Chair. Thanks.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and also thanks to the presentation and report. Just a few questions that I have. I'm not going to deal with what has already been dealt with. Your target of 4 reports per annum, this 2017-18, and you do say that you submit a report to the minister after you have done it. Is this a tick box? What happened to the outcome of the report? Because that actually happened in the terms of your report, if it does raise the challenges that require the executing authority's action, what actually happened? And you have an instance where you say this was the concern that we have and this is the solution, that we're no longer talking to that. Otherwise, I'm asking, this 4 report, are they repeating the same things or are there new things that come out of the report? The second question is the protocol, SADC protocol. This uniformity, integration, everything that we have for the last couple of 2 years now been receiving a report from you and complaining that you are a good, everybody is saying you are good and they pat you on the shoulder, but when you cross the border, operators find a different story. So inconsistency of applications or the implementation of the protocol. Well, what is the current situation now? Because we did say that, in fact, we did speak to the former Minister of Transport, that what we get when we cross the board, they must also get. Those who operate or when they come here, they must get the same. That's the only way that you're addressing the equilibrium. That's the only way that you address the problem, that others will then begin to realize that they have to change. So do you have instances where you actually started turning the screw like the screw is turned across the board? Can you speak to that and say you are doing this? How many traffic enforcement, law enforcement did you transfer to RTMC? I'm trying to find out the financial benefit, because I see your compensation of employment, I think, already been spoken to be 55 from what? From the previous year. What is the figure? The next one is this big issue for me is the user charge model, the self-sustainability. There's a whole lot of this discussion that is taking place, particularly in transport as well. User charge principle, user charge model. What are we talking about here? Because it's fairly broad. You didn't go into detail to tell us. Is user charge going to be tagged into a license? Is it going to be part of the license? Or the calculation is going to be saying we're using our roads and there is a levy. And this levy is going to be X amount of money that we're going to have to be billing those who are coming. And the bill will be issued in this way. So I'm just trying to find that out. You speak about 70% of volume is carried by 4 cross-border areas, bridges. You speak about the Sotho bridge, you speak about that. You say 70%. But you didn't quite say that the operation that understand the 70% volume and the basically personnel to address that particular demand. There is a big demand, basically. Which brings me to the question that perhaps if you could just speak to that issue. What is your average take on the arrival and exit? Somebody arrive at the border, of course you've got two bodies at the border, but what did you say is the passage, the time from arriving to exiting the border, in terms of time? What would you say in the four, only in the four borders where you're 70%? Because it would make a business or logical sense that the deployment would be skewed towards the 70% of the four and to alleviate the problem. So if you could speak to that. Now, in the targets 2017-18, you also speak about the, I think Honorable Khadr speaks to that issue about the workshop, but my question is who are your stakeholders? Have you quantified them, consolidated them to say these are the stakeholders? Because in the process of oversight, we have also to oversight you whether you are going to be able to deal with the stakeholders that you've identified. And how did you end up with 7 members of the board from the 12? Is it natural attrition, or people have they resigned, or what? Have you been speak to that issue? The last one. You spoke cleverly on this thing about the Sotho Kingdom problem. You simply just brushed over it. I just want to know a little bit more about it. The last time there was disjunctures between ourselves. There was disjunctures between what the Department of Transport facilitate to see as a solution and what is being seen by the Free State as a solution, which was a conflict. It was basically a contradiction. That was the situation which created now the problem with the kingdom. Because on one hand, the state, as represented by National, was saying this is a line of march. And which is now the supranational state, the national state. And then you had a challenge with the provincial government, who were saying we have a different interest than that of the national government, insofar as our constituency is concerned, and we have a different constituency with different, this is what we're going to decide, and they made a decision in the Senate. And what is the status quo now? Because if you're talking about SADC facilitation to deal with protocol, I get worried, because now, are you telling us that between us as the South African government, together with its provincial, we require a facilitation from SADC to have an agreement on one position around how we handle the border, the Sotho border problem? Because you didn't say what this facilitation, you clapped it together with the Kingdom of Lesotho as well as the problem that we are having at the cross border. The question is whether maybe this is not your question, you may have to share it with the Department of Transport, because the issue was more internal, the conflict was more internal, which exacerbated the conflict with the operators, because the operators were saying, but our government in the Free State have taken this decision, and this decision is what we want to see implemented. on one hand there was this national position which was in conflict with that, which created a problem. You load there, you offload here, other people offload here and they go there. So it's double payment in terms of the gen. That's really the question I wanted to end up with. What is the final status that the SAMHSA, you probably, you'll have to also help us to understand that, because it is on the last slide. Is it part of the target that that matter should be resolved in this financial year? Maybe let me pause there. I think you understand my point. So, let me.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, before I ask my questions, I'm just sensitive to time, and I wonder if I'm presuming that our guests have taken note of the questions, that they may maybe just give some general answers and then perhaps the detail in writing, because I'm looking at the time that's going to eat into our next presentation. So if I may suggest that. If some of the questions have been asked, so I won't repeat them. On your page 8, you talk about how 70% of the traffic goes through specific points. I'm presuming you have statistics as to when this flow happens and so forth, and I'm guessing that then informs a whole lot of your strategy. I just wanted to confirm that. On the same page, you talk about delays that take place at border posts. If you could just unpack, tell us what kind of delays we're talking about. And then you also mentioned about inadequate infrastructure like roads and so forth. What's being done about that? Does it fall under SANRAL or whatever entity there is? And if that is the case, at what stage are discussions in this regard, or at what stage is it being resolved? And then you talk here about frequency of stoppages for law enforcement. I'm sure you're not against the stoppages, or you're not against the law enforcement. I think what you're trying to say here is you're concerned with the delays. What is being done to try and speed up these delays, yet at the same time continue with the law enforcement? So you tell us a little more of that. And who is involved in that situation? Then, throughout the document you talk about regional integration and so forth, and you know, all that this entity can do is really just control from our side of the border. You know, we have control as to what integration we can do and so forth, but what about the other parties, the other our neighbours? How are they coming to the party? Because it's really not in our control. We can't dictate to them at what speed they need to do it, at what level, and so forth. So how is it actually working in practice? You may find a country, well, we are the most developed of the countries, so we'd obviously be presumably the most advanced in being able to do this. So how do you then ensure that your neighbours or our neighbours are also doing their share? So if you could just unpack that a little for us. My colleagues have already asked a lot of the questions, so I'll be a lot quicker. And then, you also talk about in your document you also talk about revising your financial sustainability strategy, and from what I'm seeing here and in your reports as well, is that you're really just relying on only one stream, one revenue. Have you not considered or researched other models of sustainability? And if you have, why have those not been considered? They've been shown not to be successful. You know, what are the reasons for only looking at one, very one-dimensionally? Yeah, you also talk here about regional agreements, SADC protocols and so forth. And my colleague has been talking to that. I just wanted just to add in the other aspect is a similar question to before is how do you, you know, we can certainly control and how we will meet these agreements and so forth from our side. How do other countries kind of ensure that they play their part in these agreements as well? Then if you could just tell us at what stage the road traffic inspectors is, the migration to RTMC, what stage is it at? What have been your difficulties in resolving this? All that kind of thing. If you could just unpack us where you are with that. And then just want to check that this one's been answered.
Honorable Mpanda, welcome.
No, thanks, Chair, and thanks, and greetings to all the members and the department and those who have visited us. Chair, let me apologize also for coming late. You were just taking us through as we are new in the place. And Chair, I just want to build on the what was raised by both Umaphadeb and the other colleague on the issue of the 55% on the employees' compensation. That the question I want to check on that one is that what is the threshold, the benchmark, you know, for employees' personal cost to the employer? Because I think if that is not complied with, I think there's a regulation that stipulates that, and I think then they must then try to address that going forward. I know that they are coming from the high level, but still not enough. And then the issue of the clean audit, I also want to congratulate them. I think they've done very well, but I heard the CEO saying that they are hoping to sustain that record, but hope doesn't work in this environment. They
yep.
have to come up with plans and strategies in place that is going to make sure that it's sustained going forward the years. And then the last one, Chair, is the issue of the vacancies. But now I think I was defeated by the argument that Honorable Hadebe came with of maybe engaging the minister in terms of looking at the numbers. But I was saying that if maybe that is going to be a long process, then I think the sooner the minister finalize the or fast track the filling of those vacancies, I think the better, because I think in a way it's crippling the functioning of the board. It's almost half of the board members. So I think that would be my input, Chair, so far.
Honorable Sinande.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Chairperson, first of all, I would like to apologize to come late, but I think I've sent a message to you.
That's an African way of doing things anyway.
Thank you. Chairperson, nevertheless, I'll go and join my colleagues, but to ask clarity to one or two of you. Number one. Much like 25, in terms of issuing of licenses. I wanted to find out from you that what is the status quo at the moment? Are you still talking to each other or not? Because another contribution factor of the challenges which we're facing in Free State between South Africans and Lesotho people with the issue of licenses, whereby there was a double dip, I think, whereby it was alleged that it was caused by the duplication of licenses. And then also, on slide number 10, no matter, I think my colleagues have touched a little bit on slide number 10 about this issue of a multilateral cross-border road transport agreement and agreements of MOUs. My concern is that it's about implementation. Are these agreements implemented? What is the status quo? Because again, it was alleged that after a lot of agreements, whatever it might be, but if you go to the neighboring countries, our drivers are not treated the same as our drivers here. And then I'll go to another one. One of my colleagues, of the honorable members, spoke about the issue of the delay in the post. Please take us on board again. Somewhere between Lesotho and Maseru and Fitzberg, last time when we visited as a committee, they showed us something which was a dispute whereby they were fighting over a small piece of a land. That who owns that land? Because they assumed that area can be utilized as one of the parking areas of the taxis. Was that problem solved? Or what is the status quo at the moment? Because it's now a long time since that problem was there. And then also, on slide number 28, if you talk about operator liability from 2014 Constitutional Court judgment, this one is about in terms of your key budget assumption relating to revenue. Chairperson, I'm not sure, and I don't know how to constitute my question in this regard, because it's worrying me, definitely, whereby most of the time our own matters are being resolved by courts. If there is a financial implication, approximately how much is that we're supposed to be contributed by us? If it's going to be contributed by us. I'm a little bit concerned about the issue of financial implication, whereby a lot of money doesn't go to where it's supposed to go. Then it goes somewhere. Lastly, the chairperson, about the issue of law enforcement, I know that sometimes it belongs to you, sometimes it belongs to somewhere, or to RTMC, something like that. Around the borders, it is alleged that there are a lot of gangsters who are taking an advantage from our operation. What is the status quo at this moment in order to minimize those particular incidents? I'll put an example. You do have your Ama Ninja towards the Zimbabwe border. You have Ama Kumakuma. And then the other side, if you go to Manangi, you got your Ama Ninja, etc., etc. Because there are a lot of gangsters who are taking an advantage of maybe our loophole in terms of operating of our laws. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. The indication from the committee is that some of the things will need detailed information, which actually would expect the officials to do it in writing back to the committee. But we would anticipate that in the next 20 minutes, you're able to respond to all the issues that have been raised here by honorable members. Those that cannot be raised, we will expect you to follow up in writing so that we can be able to acquaint ourselves with most of the issues that we have raised. But once more, thank you very much for the elaborate presentation that you have made, and we believe that we, if there are other issues, honourable members, that you have not raised yet, you also have the latitude, you can raise that through the committee secretary, again to CBRTA in writing. We will also do that as we are acquainting ourselves with the issues, particularly of your stress plan and your APP. Let me give you to chairperson of the board through you responses.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I'm going to pass it over to the Chief Operating Officer to address most of these. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members, for the questions. Indeed, we will, Chair, give a comprehensive responses in writing to some of the questions, but maybe just to look at a few that we can be able to deal with here. Chairperson, the issue that was raised around the intentions of the SADC workshop. What we are saying there, Chairperson, I think is also dealing with the issues that have been raised around harmonization. To say, let's look at the SADC protocol. Let's look at where we are. As a country, we've been able to achieve. What are the constraints? Why are other countries not actually implementing the SADC protocol? Because it impacts on our operators negatively. So what we are saying is that we need to be able to sit with the different member states. We need to sit with the SADC secretariat. We need to be able to say, these are the plans that we had in terms of the SADC protocol. This is how far we are. And then together agree in terms of what are the interventions. What are the plans that we must put in place? How are they going to deal with the causes that led them to not be able to achieve the actual plans that we had anticipated? But just to indicate that the intention there was just to make sure that we take stock of where we are, we understand the reasons why we are not being able to achieve. Indeed, you are correct that as a country we have been able to achieve most of them, but however, the other member states have not been able to move as far as we have moved, but it's impacting negatively on our operators, and our operators are really raising issues with us. So the intention is to look at this so that we can have concrete plans going forward together with the relevant stakeholders within the region to say this is how we're going to move going forward to make sure that the SADC protocol is effectually achieved the intentions of it.
Chair. Apology. I said, what is the outcome? We're having a workshop now. The intention of the workshop is to make sure that Babu Shabisa complies. Do you get what I'm saying? That's the outcome. But when I'm saying you want to engage and see whether you've achieved this, if you didn't achieve this, then what? It doesn't make sense. I'm saying, you're holding this portfolio committee now. The outcome here is to oversight on you whether you're implementing the indicators. And if you don't implement them, and ask you why don't you implement them? What are the hindrances? How can we help you so that you can be able to implement these things? But if you're going to have a meeting and say, okay, let's talk. After that, it's okay, thank you, I'm banned. Then it's a waste. Basically, find out what's the dilemma biscuit in the tea.
No, Chair.
Actually, my part, from 1996 to date, we're seeing other member states not complying. You should be coming and saying to the portfolio committee, the SADC protocol, this is how far we have worked as the Republic of South Africa. These are the challenges in terms of other SADC member countries. Portfolio committee, this is what we anticipate, or this is what we're looking from you as oversight, overseeing us as a CBRTA, that we have not been able to live up to the expectation of different member countries, and we expect you as a portfolio committee to do ABC so that we are able to all of us live up to the ideals of the SADC protocol. I think in essence this is what Honorable Khadere is trying to say to yourself, but I wouldn't anticipate that we would get responses from you right now in terms of how we are having an understanding, because almost how many years, 23 years, that this has been conjured by leaders, legislators and executives alike, and nothing, you have been able to do your bit. Other member states have not done anything. What is it that the executives and legislatures can do to assist you as functionaries? In essence, that is what has been said.
Thank you, sir. We have noted that, Chairperson. I think at the right time we'll be able to come to the committee and indicate. What we wanted to achieve with this particular workshop was to get deep into the challenges, so that when we come to the committee, we're able to articulate clearly what are some of the key causes and what need to happen in terms of plan going forward. So hence, our thinking was that the outcome should be a plan with commitments from different stakeholders that begin to say, this is how we're going to move on this particular thing. But at the right time, we will be coming to the committee having done the exercise, so that we can then advise the committee in terms of
can
where...
Can we give you time frames?
Yeah, certainly we can do that, but however, our plan initially was to go and engage, get to understand, so it's in itself a very elaborative process. We go and engage, we then come back having done an audit of the implementation of the protocol, not only in South Africa, but in relation to other member states, and understanding the residents and having commitment plans. So that was our intention, Chair.
Chair, what, Chair? Then they must remove this thing as an indicator, because they've never made their research and it's unaccountable. They must remove it until they make a proper research, audit, and then come and bring it here as if it's a new, or it's a new indicator. Now they must remove it, and they must not even think about using our money for that thing, because they didn't do a proper work. Please. Aye, please.
Mr. Shabbi,
how do you are
in
your
research?
You see,
you want to come to the arrest?
For research.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. I think the point from Honourable Members has been raised sharply, and we really acknowledge and will address it. But I think the bigger picture here is that you see at the SADC level where the member states, we are talking past each other in terms of quite a number of legislative reviews and amendments. That is what we're wanting to do. The workshop is to say, let us engage with our sister countries in terms of the SACO MOUs, the SADC protocols, so that we can all sing from the same time. We don't talk past each other when it comes to the land issues in terms of transportation, as well as integration in terms of this whole SADC region. So this workshop, therefore, is for us to engage with our sister. We have identified gaps and some shortcomings when we are moving forward. So we need to come under one roof and engage with them seriously in terms of this. I was going to say, let us accept the tentative time frames, not to remove it, because it's a problem. So we must have a workshop and engage with our sister at the static level, so that we all of us see the issue that is happening in this room. It's one of the issues that we need to deal with at this kind of level. I know that it has been raised. I want to respond to it as well about the issue to Maseru, Fixback, and so forth and so forth. Can we please, with your permission, Chairperson and other members, to leave it here and also make sure that we come back at a later stage and talk about what is it that we have done in consultation under this workshop with our SADC member states, so that we can come back and say where can the parliament can assist us in moving forward, and also our minister will be involved in this. But it's a matter that we need to have in our strategic plan. But I'm just suggesting, Chairperson, that taking it out, we are going to lose some of the issues that we need to address at the SADC region. Thank you very much, Chairperson, for that one.
Time frame.
Yes, Chairperson, I wanted the members to give us tentative time frame, because I remember that we know how to work towards time frame. We know that we have delivered quite a number of matters under time frame, stringent time frame by this portfolio committee I would not have a problem to have that, because we will give feedback and report to the portfolio. I'm just want to go back to the chairperson, to the deputy chairperson, to agree on the time frame, particularly on this one, on this workshop, because it's very important. I would not like to lose sight of it from our strategy plan, for, especially this one.
No, Chair, I thought it was a simple matter. Now it becomes complicated. What I mean, the facts won't change. If you say that there is a problem with implementation by our sister company in SADC, you have formed a view based on what you have already said. What is the difficulties to say Lesotho doesn't comply, Zambia doesn't comply? Because in any case, we are going to discuss that matter with them on immediate. The fact is there is a protocol. There's an agreement. The implementation, there is a problem, the unevenness in the implementation. So if we say to you, tell us who is not complying by the close of business today, you can actually do it, because we have the facts at your fingertips.
It doesn't need a workshop.
It doesn't need a workshop.
Yeah.
So it looks like for me, now that you don't want to give that information, you want us to wait for a workshop, that's where the debate comes in to say, but how do we then agree with this thing that we don't even know what you're talking about? Who is this country that are now secretive, that you have sown to secrecy,
yeah.
You can't tell us who they are. In any case, you're welcome to stay here in Parliament, because nobody can take whatever you take you to task. We are asking the question. So, Chair, I still want to say that let's agree that the workshop should go ahead, but let's also get the information. Let's get this. In any case, you are writing reports. Those reports are not secret documents, although we haven't seen them, but they are available. So let's agree that by close of business today, you will give us, because we have a task to finalize this report and submit our report for this process. We don't have a lot of time. That's my suggestion in terms of time.
So,
can we be able to get the member states who actually who are having challenges around by those of business today? Can we also get to know what are the issues which actually are making them not to comply with the SADC protocols, so that we're able to process, because we have to take this to Parliament.
Mm.
Parliament of the Republic should also be able to engage other parliaments in SADC and say these are the issues that we are seeing as a predicament towards us achieving the ideas of the SADC protocol. So in essence, can we get that, my Baba, in terms of business today?
Chair, can I request that we instead for tomorrow, because we'll be have to look at the report, we can invite the officials to work on it to consolidate, because we do have separate report, but allow us time to then look at it and send it tomorrow, it's fine.
It's okay. When are you going to have your consultation with other member states, as in the workshop that you will be having? We're very keen to want to know these things, because it cannot be right that the executives is able to say this is where we're going. Parliament endorses what the executive has said, but somewhere it falls by the wayside. It can't be right. Then it means we are toothless dogs.
Chair, in terms of our plan in the APP, it was planned for October, the actual workshop.
Okay.
That would be a difficult as well.
It's fine, as long as we are able to do it before the end of the third quarter, so that we can be able to interact with it by the fourth quarter. We are able to interact with it, and as we were preparing. It could have been nice if you would have done that workshop before we engage with the BRRR issues. That could have been a very ideal situation, so that when we deal with the BRRR, then we are able to say, in engaging with the APPs, these are the things that we came across, this is how they have been addressed, and moving forward, this is how we believe we should be able to move forward around. But we said to be advised, can you proceed? We interjected you because this, we believe, it was a precarious situation that we find ourselves in. Proceed, Mr. Mahir. No more interjections.
Chair, just part of this question was around the stakeholders that are going to be workshopped with, and Chair, is the countries that we have the agreements with, Malawi, Zimbabwe, Zambia, and Mozambique. Chair, there was an issue around whether the issue around the border towns is in our mandate and so forth, and whether we are going to engage through SALGA or whether we're going to go to the municipality directly. Chair, we do have a relationship with SALGA. We'll be able to engage with SALGA, but also part of it, Chair, is the other issue, for example, that we are dealing with is the issue of the truck stops. Now, the issue of the truck stops might be about land that is in the municipality. It might be something that is a land that is unused, but the community there might actually benefit out of converting it into a business entity like a trust shop. So we're looking at all those kind of things, and that's why we're thinking that as a contribution to making sure that we improve economic development of the different border towns, we should be able to advance that. And Chair, we can discuss with municipalities as well as the South on that one. The other issue, Chair, was around the membership of the board. Chair, let me just indicate, as a regulator in terms of our Act, we need two freight operators that is regulated in terms of the Act. We need two passenger experts. We need a deputy chair and a chairperson who are not experts already in terms of the regulatory committee of about 6 members. And then the other members are different skills like your legal that we need in the regulatory committee, as well as your finance in the audit committee and so forth. So I think those are the issues that we'll deal with. There was a question around the expenditure of 55%. I'm going to ask the CFO to address that one, as well as the audit report. Yeah, as well as the audit report in terms of how it affected the operation.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just deal with all the issues that are finance related. I'll start with the question on law enforcement and the impact on our financial position. The question was, how many officers were transferred to RTMC? The 138 officers were transferred to RTMC, including support staff, for example, your banking officers. We've got 9 banking officers who are included in that 138 number. In terms of financial implications, we are going to save, in terms of operating costs, 12 million, then save employee costs, 68 million, which gives us a total saving of 80 million on expenditure. But we are also going to sacrifice around 32 million of the fines or penalty income that we've been receiving from that department or that function. So the total effect or the net effect is that we are going to make a saving of 48 million per annum. The other question, Chair, was around the audit outcomes vis-a-vis the matter that we lost in the Constitutional Court on the 12th of May 2015. It has got, yes, indeed, implications on the audit outcomes, in the sense that ordinarily the auditors would want to know if we still operate as a going concern. And indeed, the auditors asked that question. But obviously, we had prepared ourselves for that financial year, which is why we were not qualified. And going forward, we've not been qualified, and we eventually got a clean audit. What the question that we had to address around that matter is, indeed, how do we plan to refund that liability? So with the plan that we presented to our auditors, And obviously, we also had to convince them how we restructured our expenditures, so that while we are on one hand servicing the debt that we had, we were carrying, we were also going to be able to pay our salaries and to pay for any other costs. And obviously, Chair, it had some implications on our operations, in the sense that as management we had to sit down and restructure our costs. We sacrificed some of the discretionary expenditure that we would have had, we could do without. So that's what has kept us afloat, and that has worked so far. We've been this year is our third year whilst we're refunding this debt. So we've been able to refund the debt, but also we've been able to meet our targets or to fund our targets from an APB point of view. Then I think to that is related the question of the 55%, which is our expenditure, the ratio of our employee cost to the total expenditure. Our target has always been around 60%. We are a regulator, and you would notice here that most of our costs, therefore, out of specialists that we do employ. And as part of our cost-cutting measures as well, we had to do away with such costs like the use of consultants, just as an example. So we do use internal resources. So we think that 55% is a reasonable figure for a regulator like us. The worry that we had in the past was that it had gone out of the band of 60%, it had gone to 69-70%. And that has since been reduced, as I've indicated in my presentation, that we are projecting it to be 55%. So at this point in time, we are comfortable with the 55% of our employee costs as a total of our total expenditure. I think there was a question relating to the diversification of revenue. Chair, maybe that can be subject to a written response as well. However, we the COO presented the issue of cross-border charges. We think it is a material source of revenue, should that be implemented, but it is something that we look at in terms of generating income in the medium to long term because of the requirements. Right now we are at a project planning phase, and we don't expect to receive any income from that operation in the next 2 financial years or so, which is why the revenue stream has not been budgeted for. But it's something that I think we should also include in our report to the members. But that's part of our efforts in terms of diversification of revenue streams. You would also notice that we have restructured our treasury function. So that at least whatever we generate, for example, from our investments, from an interest income point of view, is material and is also able to fund our operations. It's not so that we don't necessarily rely on permit issuance. Thank you.
Chairperson, there was an issue around the 4 reports, the Section 39 report, whether it was a tick box report, but it is the... This is a report on compliance. It's a report on law enforcement. When our operators go out, as well as our profiling analysts who are more of intelligence analysts, they go out and they look at the level of compliance. They are able to pick up the operators who are not complying with the act, who are not complying with certain traffic laws. They are then giving us the report that we then use it for the purpose of making decisions at the regulatory committee. So that instead of when an operator applies for a permit, coming through the regulatory committee, we actually check as to whether this operator is compliant. So it's a report that we do on an ongoing basis, but we submit it to a regulatory committee on a quarterly basis to inform decision making. So it's not just a tick box report, it's a report that begins to talk to individual operators and individual level of compliance of those particular operators. So that's the report that we use, the 4 reports of the Section 39, it's in terms of our act that you must produce those reports. But those reports add value to us in the sense that we are able to know at any given point in time certain operators that you must not renew their payments because of their level of non-compliance and so forth. So that's also how we use that report. So the user charge model in terms of the cross-border charges is more on the, it's not, we're not going to levy these charges on the local operator. The charges are more on the foreign operators who are coming to the country, but it's on, also on the basis of the reciprocity. Because the ferry protocol talks to reciprocity, and therefore when our operators are subjected to certain charges on the other side when they cross, we are then, in terms of the ferry protocol, able to reciprocate and also then levy the similar charges. So it's not to our cross-border operators, domestic cross-border operators, it's to foreign operators, but it's also on the basis of reciprocity, not just the user pay charge. So if a particular country introduces a charge, either it's an access charge or road user charge, we should then be able to, as a country, also introduce a charge to reciprocate and making sure that we level the playing field for our operators.
Honourable members, I thought that
we agree on the written response.
Yes.
But just yes, I agree with that, Chair. But let me just point out the problem we're going to have with the written response. If this is the way we're going to respond, we're going to have a problem, because you're saying we're going to use the user charge informed by a country that is using this kind of method. In that explanation, there is no example. You are speaking as if this nothing exists. There is nobody already that is charging you certain things. You're not able to say, for an example, when you go to Zim, this is what we are subjected to. They're charging us for this, they're charging for us this, they're charging us for that. And therefore, next time we're going to say, Zim brothers, when you walk in, this is exactly the same thing. We're going to give you the same thing. So if you give us the information, give us example of what you're, then we at least we have the picture. So that's why I was just pointing out. But I agree 100% with you, Chair, that we can get them in our entirety, but at least give us an example.
No, Chair, we do have a comprehensive a business case that speaks to individual charges by different countries, and we provide that information. We provide it as part of the submissions. Chair, how the vacancies of the board arose? So we had the resignations, and the former chairperson resigned due to ill health. And the deputy chair's contract expired in March. She also resigned just a month or so before. And then hence we have the resignation. The department did advertise. I understand that they have received the application and are processing the application. So the issue of the Free State Lesotho, the DDG from DOT is actually the head of the National Ministerial Task Team, and I will not venture into that. If we need to respond here, Chair, I'll allow the DDG to respond, but we can also just submit a written response.
Meanwhile, while you are sorting yourself, let's get Tavisa to respond because he indicated earlier on that he will be responding to the issues. But compounded here, Mr. Tavisa, is the fact that, which has been raised by honorable members here, that how do you now deal with the province which actually wants to elevate itself to that higher level? I think you must also include that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I think, yes, this has been quite a challenge for some time now. What has happened since then? I want to respond to Honourable Ramatlakane's concern to say we reached a stage to be mediated on this matter. The matter is that The Sotho took us to the secretariat of SADC under the pretext that we were not addressing the matter adequately and speedily enough. So we had to therefore engage with the secretariat at that level. After all the endeavors that we have put forward, the report that we submitted to the portfolio committee, and also the engagement that we had with the Free State Exco, and we thought that we are on the same page, only to find that on the ground, according to the Lesotho, the kingdom was not happening according to what we said. But they are part of the task team. What is amazing is that we'll come and discuss, and they go away and say something else with the Minister Mukerej, for instance. So let us do a full report to what we have done since then up until now. There have been meetings between the former minister here in Cape Town, in Matatiele, together with the Basotho and us and the task team. They are members of the task team here. So we would like to do a full report, because we need a full presentation on this matter, so that we can engage on it blow by blow. Because we had several meetings on this matter, but it seems like it's going away now. Everybody seems on the same page. Yes, we fully agree that we are South Africans. There's no province that is more superior than other provinces when it comes to matters of cross-border. We are all the same. That has been communicated very well to the provincial leadership, that we must be all together under one roof and resolve this matter as South Africans. So South Africans now, we are united in saying this is the way we are going to be dealing with it in terms of SACCO MOUs, in terms of protocols in SADC. That is what is going to happen. I know the FISPEC and Maseru ranking facilities, they were part of this thing, which was quite a very hot potato. But fortunately enough, MEC Mashini went and resolved the matter. So in as far as we are concerned, that one is no more an issue. But the bigger picture here is the actual cross-border issues. You take the people from Lesotho, you come this side, you offload and reallocate. That to us is not what the protocol says. So that's where we are now. We seem to be agreeing now to say what is happening in all other borders which are leading to South Africa and outside. This one is a unique one. Why is it so much of a unique? That is where we are now, Stephen. We will come here and deliberate on a report, our situation, and where we are now, and what is the way forward after we've met with the Secretariat of SADC here in South Africa. They were here. They came together. We were together with Lesotho and ourselves, and then we crafted the way forward, which we all agreed on. So I think we will now have a seamless free flow of goods and services, including the Maseru border post as well as FISPEC. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mayepa, I'm giving you 3 minutes to finalize your responses. The rest of the responses will come in writing.
Thank you, Chairperson. The issue of the different streams in terms of our financial sustainability will also provide information. We have done the revenue assessments of the revenue streams, different ones. We had sale of information in terms of our act. We had the Nolimbogo Bridge that we looked at. We had cross-border charges. We also looked at what our act allows us to do. We have done those assessments, and we've been able to say for this reason, this particular stream is not feasible, this stream is not feasible. Hence, we then ended up with the cross-border charges as a key stream that we must champion. We will provide the actual revenue strategy to the committee as well, Chairperson. So in terms of the migration of the law enforcement to RTMC, I can just indicate that it's 138 employees who were migrated to the RTMC, Chairperson, and members. We continue, however, to work with the RTMC, because in terms of the actual act, the cross-border law enforcement remains the mandate of the CBRTA in terms of the act. So we are having an MOU with the RTMC. We have agreed in terms of how we're going to work together while the act is not yet amended, to make sure that the mandate is fulfilled. As I've indicated, we've also ensured that We've got measures in place between ourselves and them to make sure that the support that the law enforcement was giving to the regulatory function of the CBRT remains intact. Chairperson. Chair, let me rather indicate that, Chair, that the issues that we have not responded to, we will then give a write-up on them.
Chair, with the issue of the international relation, I wonder if they've also, you know, managed to do or deal with the issue of the development of international relation and cooperation, which is one of the other important stakeholders they must have, and issues of trade and industry, which are the stakeholders that are important to have. But my other challenge, Chair, with this thing that I'm saying, it mustn't continue. On the 29th August 2012, they had the very same conference. And they raised these issues. They didn't address them. I mean, 2012, 2013, 14, up till now, they haven't done anything. I'm just saying, I'm cautious of agreeing with this. But with your permission, Chair, let them go and review. But my view, Chair, is that let them give us a proper response next week, Tuesday. In that meeting. Because they can't go and implement that thing without having proper research.
I wanted to make a follow-up on what was raised by Honorable Khatete.
That's sorry, guys.
One shy, Chairperson. 1 minute in running a school. It would take 1 hour. I wanted to make a follow-up on what was raised by Honorable Khatete. Good people, I was listening. And if you recall very well, I even asked you purposely so. I referred on slide number 10 on regional environment. The very same issue, but another way. The issue of 2012 is there. And the problems, I mean, the theme of that meeting was the problem experienced in the region to be raised and debated in a multilateral forum. And in that meeting, our countries, the submission and the they got the way South Africa, and Botswana, and Zambia, and Zimbabwe, and Mozambique, and DRC. And again, Chairperson, there were only two sharp, serious concerns. There were a lot of concerns, I can name them now, but you stated about two by then. In the Honorable Khatete, is that what is the purpose of that workshop you're talking about? What is the theme of it? Because previously you failed to come up with the theme because there were serious disputes. For an example, your serious the final one was enforcement of the 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. restriction on dangerous goods in Zimbabwe. The second one was increasing number of licensing requirement on foreign transport. Those are the key ones which you come up with. But it's loaded. I can bring more, Chairperson. I'm trying to say, please, man, when you brief us, prepare yourself. He's correct when he said prepare yourself. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I think all the issues that you have taken cognizance of will get the response by next week Tuesday. You would have received your written responses back to the committee. On that note, Prof, thank you very much, Deputy Chairperson of CBRTA, COO of CBRTA, and the entire team. Thank you very much. 3 minutes comfort break when RAF will be preparing. Thank you very much, Tadisa. Your next team is sitting there. 3 minutes comfort break, honorable members, that RAF will be preparing for presentation.